It's another wine chat, and we're covering another region of Italy. This time we're heading north of the foothills of the Alps and visiting the Piemonte region and taking a look at Nebbiolo, there you go, and its little brother Barbera. To discuss this and more, we are joined by none other than 2SCR resident wine expert, Cal Lee. Cal, how the hell are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Cam. Thank you.
I had the gestures out. It was the full body vocal acting I needed to get across the pronunciation correctly of Piemonte, Nebbiolo, Barbera. I'm flicking my wrist, I'm punching the air, getting these words out into the world.
And I think, as someone who's obviously incredibly fluent in Italian, I think you're doing 10 out of 10s on all of these.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm usually pretty good with pronunciations, but when it's come to wine specifically, I'm just completely falling apart.
I think it might just be the French stuff that's actually tripping you up now.
It's the French stuff, but like even still, when I've got like I can sort of, I think it's because I don't have a minute to just look and like roll it around in my head before I can actually say it. But you know, it makes for good comedy radio, I think.
Exactly.
It keeps things interesting. So can you tell us about the Piemonte region and what it's all about?
Yeah, so Piemonte, literally meaning like mountain foot or like foot of the mountain, is basically sort of the northwest region of Italy, very close to like France and Switzerland. And because of that has had sort of like quite a long history of sort of like cultural exchange, especially with France and sort of in the way in which, you know, sort of like people talk about like Alsace in France as being like very Germanized, like Piemonte tends to be a little bit Francicized. Don't come for me on that comment. Like, but there's like actual history to back that one up.
They're coming, mate. They watch out. They're at your door.
But there's sort of there's obviously the city of Turin is sort of like the region's capital, and then we sort of have, in terms of major players in the regions, we have the towns of Alba and Asti. Which is sort of the two we'll be focusing on. We've also got like the towns of Barolo, which we'll come back to, and sort of Monteforte, which is another sort of like regional center around there. But basically, like, think of it as these sort of like rolling foothills. It's sort of probably the coldest region as Italy goes. But because you've got this sort of like subalpine terrain, you get a lot more sunlight hours than some of the other regions of Italy because you can sort of build things into these slopes and get a lot better exposure there. Typically, we sort of see three main red varietals. There's also Moscato, which is grown in Asti, and that's made into like what you think of as classic Moscato, the sort of like slightly fizzy, sweet white wine. Mm. That's where that hails from originally.
And Ricadonna Asti, is that from the same region as well? Or is it?
I'd assume so, yeah. There's a lot of, Asti produces a lot of really cool stuff, actually, that's sort of out of the purview of what we're going to go through today. But in terms of reds, you've sort of got Dolcetto, which is a variety I really like, but sort of doesn't make wines of significance, I guess is like the polite way of putting it. And then you've got Barbera, which is probably the most widely planted around there, which is sort of like, you know, the makes some nice wines, but is more of a workhorse grape varietal. And then you sort of have Nebbiolo, which is planted specifically sort of like north of Alba there, in what's sort of you hear it referred to as like the Langhi, because like Langa is like what they refer to as the hills as, so Langhi is the plural. It's sort of referring to the hilly nature of that region. And sort of is sort of the pretty much exclusively the only spot where it's grown in Europe. There's a few other pockets here and there, but that really is the home of Nebbiolo. And Nebbiolo is probably the most well-regarded red grape in Italy, and is very, very prestigious, you know, and very, 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 very hard to do right, I guess, is the other thing there.
Yeah. So why is Nebbiolo better than Barbera and considered the best grape variety to come out of Italy?
Yeah, and it's sort of like it's always this hard thing, right? It's like, is Nebbiolo actually better? Like, no, but kind of, yeah. So it's Nebbiolo specifically is a grape that is very light in color, but incredibly high in tannin, and very high in acid. which means that sort of it has to undergo this like very long, slow, arduous ripening period. And then once you get it, you have to work it quite a lot to sort of get some stuff out of it. Because if you don't, the wines come out really pale. They're a little bit flimsy. They tend to be quite prone to oxidation. When we sort of dive into Barolo a bit more specifically, we'll talk about that in a little more detail. But Barbera, which is a grape I really enjoy, is sort of, I guess you're more, it's your weeknight drinking wine. And that is how it exists there economically, right? Because the process of producing Nebbiolo is so time-consuming and expensive, you can't rely on that as a source of income consistently. You need to, you know, make wines that can pay the rent week to week. And that's kind of where Barbera does exist, is this workhorse varietal. Obviously, there are like Barbera, the like specific Barbera DOCs that are like really, really prestigious, where they're making quite high-quality wines from it. And, you know, but there's also just totally like generic sort of Rosso kind of style wines that are predominantly Barbera with a little bit of Dolcetto blended in, that are just these sort of like really approachable, like high acid, not particularly tannic, not particularly sophisticated, but really approachable, food-friendly red wines.
And let's get into Barolo then. So just what is a Barolo and why are they so expensive?
Yeah, so Barolo has a really interesting history. I'm not going to – there's like people who spend their entire lives writing about Barolo specifically, and I'm not going to cover all that in the 1 minute and 45 seconds I have here to do it. But suffice to say, Barolo as a region has been tied to various like regal and like noble lineages throughout time, and is basically a region where it produces wines that are incredibly heavily structured with really, really hard tannins. But after extended aging, and we're talking like 10 years minimum kind of thing here, they begin to soften and then turn into these really beautiful things with these like lifted floral aromatics, this still quite bright, intact acidity to it, and then these like beautiful sort of earthy notes of like, you know, white truffle. You hear tar and roses a lot, which like tar is slightly off-putting to people, but it is that sort of like really earthy, like rich sort of petrichor kind of like earthiness on the base of it. And these wines are gorgeous when they sort of have had the time to fully complete their development. But part of making Barolo also means, you know, most of these wines spend 30 to 60 days like in their ferment state, just being like pumped over and macerated to get what little color they can from the Nebbiolo grapes. And then they spend up to 36 months being aged before they're ready to be released. And they're like really serious time investments. And you sort of hear this phrase a lot where it's sort of, it's, you know, like it's the wine for kings, it's the king of wines, which I think is actually a quote from like 1912 or something like that. But like it really is this sort of very laborious, super time consuming process that only after you've spent years and years making this thing, you then have to wait an extra 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 15 years to fully gain the benefits from it. And I think it's that kind of focus and attention to detail that has really made Barolo really internationally respected across the world. And then, like most things that are popular, the demand for it is higher than the production. And we've seen that in sort of like Barolo prices have never been cheap, but they've gone up pretty significantly in the last 20 or so years, I would say, especially post-2000s. And they consistently, and this might be like a climate change thing, but we're not trying not to talk about that too much. They're getting better ripeness more consistently because they are having warmer summers on average over there because everything's getting hotter.
Yeah.
And I try not to think about it too much because it stresses me out. But yeah, that's sort of, I guess, the very, very brief overview of the Barolo region.
Well, if there's one good thing, you know. let's bring it back to our own backyard, Cal. Where in Australia could I find Neb and Barb?
Yeah. So yeah, Barbera's been in Australia since the 60s. We brought cuttings over from California because it was having a real really good time over there. Barbera likes sunlight, and it keeps acidity with sunlight, which is something that we really need in Australia because we have a lot of sunlight. We've got a lot of heat. So you can find it, like, once again, a lot of these regions are going to be the sort of like Italian settled regions. But for me, like, key players are sort of places like King Valley, Adelaide Hills, McLaren Vale, obviously. But even then, like, a lot of New South Wales is growing Barbera now. A lot of Victoria in general is growing Barbera now. There's even little pockets of it up in, like, the Clare Valley and stuff like that. But, like, you know, there's lots of really good producers out there that I think are all pretty approachable. And then in terms of Nebbiolo, it's a little more exclusive. It was first planted out in Mudgee and failed terribly because it was just too warm, and then the whole thing was really gnarly. So it does need that little bit more altitude. So sort of the King Valley and the Alpine Valleys in Victoria is where I've seen a lot of really great success with it. But also in Western Australia, in the sort of further south, and like sort of that great southern area, and little bits of Margaret River, there's some really, really great success there with Nebbiolo. Also the Yarra Valley as well, in the sort of upper Yarra. We're seeing some pretty cool stuff. If people want to actually, like, try a Nebbiolo that I reckon everyone can access, Little Giant, which is like a Pinnacle Drinks brand, do like an Adelaide Hills Nebbiolo for, I want to say it's like $27. That's not my wine rec for the week, but like, go out and try that. It's a pretty wild wine. I think it's a great way to sort of approach the varietal.
Cool. And on your rec this week, what are you drinking?
I am drinking the Ravensworth Nebbiolo. This is fruit from the Hilltops region, but it's made in Canberra. This to me has sort of been my go-to of the Nebbiolo in Australia for a couple of years now. I think the winemaking behind it is just really, really smart. There is quite a bit of vintage variation in between years here, but I think that also speaks to the fact that Nebbiolo is quite a temperamental grape, and you sort of expect to see that here, but it has that really beautiful, like, bright, pretty acidity and quite well structured without necessarily needing the sort of really heavy oak usage and extended aging that you do see in a lot more of the Italian examples there. So yeah, that's going to be my little wine rec for this week.
Fantastic. All right. What region are we looking at next week?
Yeah, I think next week we're going to pop over to the other side and sort of start looking at the wines around Veneto. And, you know, we'll have a little bit of a chat probably about Pinot Grigio as well in there, I think.
Fantastic. Can't wait to hear it.
Yeah.
And I believe you've got an event coming up, Cal.
Yes. I'm going to be doing the drop again next Wednesday. Grab tickets online at thehivebar.com.au. I'll put up a little link for it as well in the description of this episode. But we're going to be showing off the wines from Unico Zello, from Brendan and Laura. They do really cool stuff. If you've heard this, check out Wine for the People. They do a much better job at this whole thing than I've ever done, but, you know, I'd like to get there one day. but they're really, really cool. I think their wines are looking awesome. And who knows, there might even be some of these Italian alternate varietals we've been talking about in that lineup. Oh, my God.
Fantastic. Well, you never know. You never know. Pop on down. I'll talk to you next week, Cal. It's been an absolute pleasure, as always.
It's good to hear from you, Cam. Take care.
You too. That was Cal Lee for Cal's Wine Chat.